Hey everybody, welcome to the Rubberneckin' Podcast, and back by popular demand after last week's stellar performance is our Director of Archives, Angie Marchese. Welcome again to the podcast.
Thanks for asking me back. This is wonderful.
Well, you're of course the expert on all things Elvis.
And I learn something new every day.
You do, and yes. And often you're teaching us what you learn. And of course, this month is February. You've had a busy month putting together a new exhibit that's now open to the public, and of course open with great fanfare with Priscilla Presley.
Yes.
Helping do the honors to open the exhibition. And now we're also talking about American Sound. 45 years since Elvis had those incredible recording sessions at this Memphis studio that no longer exists.
Exactly. You know, his first recordings at American Sound were in January of 69. He first showed up there and recorded In the Ghetto and Suspicious Minds. All that was in the first session. But then the second session actually happened in February of 69. And out of that session came songs like Any Day Now and Kentucky Rain. I mean, really iconic songs from that time period. And it was a changing point in Elvis's career, you know, because he had been doing the movie soundtracks, and that was the music he was releasing for so long that this was really his first opportunity to actually release his music.
He had a more creative experience at American Sound.
Very much so. And he was very much just like he always was in the studio, very much the producer, the director, the singer. You know, he would pick up instruments and he would like, no, this is what I want it to sound like. And he would, you know, play the guitar or play the bass or, you know, a very much in control of every aspect of the recording session.
And of course, the American Sound studio that Elvis walked in is no longer there.
No, it's not. It's no longer there. Sad that it's not there, but a lot of great music was recorded there.
And, in addition to Elvis, there were lots of greats that wound up there. Of course, Chips Moman was kind of the head of the studio at that point and kind mm-hmm. of helped was drive the creative direction. But
right.
Not only Elvis, but lots of artists came in from out of town into Memphis to record
there. Record at American Sound. And then they went on to record at Stax.
Yes.
You know, because American Sound was kind of Stax's sister studio mm-hmm. at the time. You know, so there was a lot of great music that was being recorded in Memphis at that time. Elvis was just part of the great sound that was happening during that time.
And still very much a vibrant music scene today in Memphis. Mm-hmm. And recording continues at Sun Studio even today in the very room that Elvis recorded in.
Yes, lots of entertainers stand on the X and record their own music there, which is great. You know, famous people from Bono, U2, ZZ Top. Most recently, Cyndi Lauper recorded there. I mean, just lots of great people have been in that space. And it's a vibe in Memphis that mm-hmm. the music that comes from Memphis has a certain vibe to it, you know, and Elvis felt it. That's why he recorded at Sun. And that's why it was important in 69 when he came back to record his own music. He recorded it here in Memphis, not mm-hmm. in Nashville, not in Hollywood. It was here in Memphis. And it was, of course, the session started at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
You know, and would go to the early hours of the morning. But it was all about being here because this is where the feeling was. This was home.
And of course, in the studio at American Sound was not only Chips Moman, but the Memphis Boys, mm-hmm. Who backed up Elvis and a variety of artists.
And the Holiday Sisters.
And the Holiday Sisters.
Yes.
Let's take a quick listen to an interview with Chips Moman, who was in the studio with Elvis and helped give some creative direction to the King of Rock and Roll.
Did you know something was going to happen out of that session when you got the phone call? First of all, what brought Elvis to American Sound? I mean, you guys were doing your hits. You didn't need Elvis there to be established. You were already rocking. How did Elvis get to American?
Well, Marty Leiker, he was doing a lot of things for me, and he was working for Elvis too. And anyway, he put it together.
Mm-hmm. The sessions that happened there, I know in the past for Elvis, there had been kind of a hierarchy in how songs got presented to Elvis. You didn't work that way.
No.
How did you work in song selection, even for other artists? How did you decide what people were going to work on in your studio?
Well, I would get the songs together and I would play them for them just before we would record them, really. I've always enjoyed the fact is that the singer would learn the song at the same time with the band. And it always seemed to work good that way.
Mm-hmm. And you had guys like the Memphis Boys who could play so many different kinds of music behind different kinds of artists.
Right.
So there was a comfort level there for you.
Right.
Was it important for you as a producer to have musicians like that were your family that were part of you, and then kind of the changeable element was the singer who would come into the studio.
Right. It was very important to me.
What difference did it make to you being a producer, the fact that you were already a musician, already a guitar player, already a songwriter? Is that, you think that's important for a producer, to that talent to have?
I think it helps. I really do.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about how you ended up, I said it before, 827 Thomas Street. How do you end up in that facility? What brought you there?
The rent, for one.
I'm thinking low rent because it's on a truck route.
Right.
And only you would think, what a great place for a recording studio.
We've had more ambulances and fire engines and stuff on records than I guess most anyone.
Didn't really make any difference though, did it, if you got the magic?
It'd work in there sometime.
Yeah. Tell me about the atmosphere in the recording studio. You guys had Neil Diamond around that time. You'd been doing so many records on artists. What was the mood like that you can remember of when Elvis arrived for that first session? Were you guys nervous about what was going to happen? I asked the guys earlier who set the tone, you know, for the evening, and they were saying that it's kind of a dance between the artist and the bands and the producer. But for you, what do you remember about that first session together?
Well, it's pretty far back. I remember when he came in at he and Priscilla were together, and it was amazing to me that how much they looked alike. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, and basically it was like all the other sessions that we had done. We didn't change anything. We just did what we always do.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times on a lot of these outtakes that we hear a lot of chatter back and forth between you and the musicians and Elvis and things. Was he, do you think, could you sense a difference in what these sessions, I mean, looking back, you can speak about where this was in his music. I mean, his music had not been highly regarded on the charts or critically prior to coming to you. Did you think you could work that magic with him that you had done with so many other, or do you think that way?
Yeah, I did. When Elvis started doing all of his movie songs and things, you know, it was a kind of a letdown to me because I liked the old Elvis. That was what I was really into. But when he came there and My whole thing was to give him different kind of songs than he had been getting before, and that's what I tried to do, was to get the best songs I could get at the time.
And did you know or not care that that's not what you did with Elvis? That you found that a lot of times he was given songs that Colonel had said, pick your songs from this group of songs. Yeah. You either didn't care or didn't know that that's not the way you worked. You were talking about the best songs.
Yeah, well, the Colonel wasn't on that session.
Yeah, the general was on that session. I've also read, and I talked to the guys, the Memphis guys, and I, you know, you read things and you want to talk to the people who were there. I've read that at some point you just finally said, you know what, musicians only in the studio.
Yeah.
I mean, that was your world, and what did you do?
Well, I tell you, an Elvis entourage is pretty good size, you know. So I had to do something to even make more room in the studio. So we had to close it somewhat for a lot of the people that were there.
For the magic that happens in the studio for an artist, did all of your sessions work that all of your musicians were together with the artist primarily, that it was all like at the same time?
Was, yeah.
As a producer, is that important to get everybody like that?
Well, to me it is. If you're all working on the same song, it's important.
Yeah. So what you see now is you see so many people playing instruments together or duets, and they're not even in the same country sometimes. They're just
That's right.
Adding it together.
Right.
Talk to me a little bit about your facility there. How did you record Elvis? What kind of arrangement did you have there? Was he in the center? Was he over on the side, isolated? What was the arrangement?
He was on the side, and it was a booth that we left the door open, but it was a booth so we could have more separation. But he stayed on the side of the and up front, close to the control room.
When you were working on songs, I'm sure you got some in one or two takes, some in... I've read about you that you're the kind of producer that if you don't think you have it, you'll work on it until you do, because you know that it can be there. What's the longest you've ever worked on on one track?
4 days.
And this is, you know, and we were just saying Elvis sometimes in one session would do 12, 13, 14 songs, and here's a guy who said, we've got it, let's move on. You?
Usually, yeah.
When did you know you had it?
Well, by the end of the take.
That was the one.
Yeah.
Did Elvis ever say, no, I think I'm, you know, let's do that one again? I mean, you'd probably do that, but you know you've got it.
Yeah. Elvis was easy to work with. After that first song that we recorded, the rest of it was downhill. It was easy because he was really excited about doing recording again, and it was quite different from the movie things that he'd been doing.
Yeah.
So he had fun and I had fun. We all had fun.
I think it comes through on those songs that we listen to. When you hear them today, what do you have memories of the sessions or the moments or is it just music now that you can appreciate?
Well, it's just music now. It's hard to remember everything that went on in there. But as usual, there's always really a lot of comedy that goes on in a recording studio. Mm-hmm. And I try to remember some of that as I hear some of these songs, but it's hard to remember it.
Yeah. There's a song that, if you listen to a lot of the outtakes, you hear Elvis singing this song, and I've heard there's a legend behind this song, a song called This Time.
Yeah.
What's the, because we'll play that in a minute, but what's the legend of, tell us about This Time, how that fits in with American and Chip's moment.
Well, I wrote the song, and Elvis knew the song, and he would sing, he sang it. And
just between takes, he would just kind of start singing.
He would start singing that song. And I wish I'd have recorded it.
Well, you did a little bit. Let's listen to the song I Can't Stop Loving You that we all know by Elvis. But before he can work his way into it, he just decides he's going to do a little bit of a Chip song called This Time. Let's listen to this.
I just jump in there whenever I get a chance.
I think I forgot to wear my cuff. That's just my way of loving you. This time we're really breaking up. I know I forgot to wear my cuff. I don't know. I don't know. That we once knew.
There you go. So he did record This Time with Elvis. Hearing that, listening to that, when you hear songs on the radio, not even by Elvis, but other artists that you've produced, are you the kind of producer that still, all these years later, I could do it better? I want to go back and remix that. I wish I could.
Yeah. Yeah, I still feel that way on just about everything I ever cut.
Wow. That's a true artist is never finished. They want to continue. Sometimes it has to just be taken away.
Right.
To stop fiddling with it. I'm sure you probably fiddled with stuff too long, too.
Well, I've wore the tape out before.
Well, that probably is a sign you've been noodling too much on that. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about you guys. Something unusual happened on Suspicious Minds, on the single to that song. And we hear it today and we just accept it. But you did something very unusual on the end of Suspicious Minds with the fade out. What was your thought? What do you remember about?
I didn't do that.
You didn't do that?
No. No, that fade out was something that was created by RCA. I wouldn't have done that.
When RCA took the tapes away from you, they were still noodling around with them. I guess they were wanting to do things with them.
Yeah.
So that's not yours?
No.
Okay, we'll see what we're finding out here. What's your favorite song? I've got the box here, the disc. What's your favorite song of the ones that you cut with Elvis?
I'm partial to Suspicious Minds.
That's a pretty good one, I'm sure. Yeah, I can see that one. He worked with a lot. You had a lot of different. If you look at the credits on a lot of these songs, you see people who eventually, maybe at the time, were quite successful songwriters. But you see people like Mac Davis and Eddie Rabbit and people who Neil Diamond who went on to have success as songwriters. So you guys were really finding the cream of the crop at the time, you know, songwriting wise.
Yeah, well, that's part of a producer's job, is to stay in contact with as many good writers as you can, because songs has always been the beginning of a hit, and mm-hmm. and if you don't have the songs, then you got real trouble. But I always stayed in touch with songwriters, and I always would listen to everything that came in too, mm-hmm. which was another time-consuming job. But you got to listen to all the things that come in.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about Memphis in the 1960s, and what was going on around this town and in the environment that you guys were living in and recording in. Like you said, it was not in the best part of town. But the rent was cheap.
Yeah.
What are your memories of Memphis around that era?
About all I can remember about Memphis was inside that studio, because I basically lived in that thing. I was there day and night a lot.
You know, there's a lot of questions that people had online that I found, and it's funny. One of the ones that was the most prevalent. And I thought people would probably want to know the answer to this. And again, there have been many stories and rumors about how'd you get the name or the nickname Chips?
It's just, I just got it. I don't know exactly how I got it.
So we're free to come up with our own story about Chips.
Make up your own deal.
Something tells me I think he knows a little more than he's letting on, but we're going to... Tell me about these guys that were just out here, the Memphis Boys. How successful was American and your sound because of what these guys brought to you? And how did you find them? How did you piece these guys together?
Well, actually, most of them, I had worked jobs with them in different bands, you know. And I knew that they were great musicians, and so I went after them one at a time, and we finally ended up with all of them. And I'm proud to say that we've been together over 40 years.
A lot of great music that we listen to because of you gentlemen and what you've contributed to music. What are you doing now? We don't see you around. We don't hear your. What's going on?
Well, I raise horses now.
But tell them where. Down in the.
In Georgia.
Down in Georgia, back home in Georgia.
Yeah.
I'm going to drop him off on the way home.
Yeah, my hometown is where I was born. It was LaGrange, Georgia.
LaGrange, Georgia. You're back in LaGrange.
Yeah.
That's great. What do you think is the lasting legacy of Elvis? You're a part of this. You said it was your first time at Elvis Week. When you think of him, you know, we've got our own relationship with our image of Elvis, but what's your memory, your outstanding memory of working with him in those years?
Well, it's hard for me to say. I mean, I liked Elvis for a long time, but getting to work with him was really a pleasure for me, because we got along in the studio very good, and he was funny. He was just really enjoyable to work with, and that's what I remember.
Yeah.
And he worked very hard. He would.
You know, you changed the game for him.
Well, hopefully so.
I think we think so.
Fascinating to hear what Chip's...
I love hearing Chip talk about that time, because it puts you back in that place. You listen
to him
talk, and it puts you... It's like you're right there in the studio with Elvis, and you're having that same experience. It's great.
Really is. And of course, Chip was here for Elvis Week not mm-hmm. too long ago, and of course that's when we captured that interview. Just one of the many wonderful pieces of music history that we have in the archives here at Graceland.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about our archives is that it's not just a passive archives, just collecting Elvis's stuff or cataloging Elvis's collection. We're very much an active archives. We very much catalog and collect things still today, not only dealing with memorabilia or things that might have belonged to Elvis, but also interview clips like the one from Chip, and, you know, capturing this legacy, this oral legacy, this oral history legacy that is so important for future generations to have.
Thanks again for joining us for the Rubberneckin' Podcast, Angie. We truly appreciate it.
And, oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
And we'll have you on the show soon again.
All right. See you later.
Thank you.